Welcome back to Directly Current. I'm your host, Max Patton. On this episode, I get to speak to a very exciting guest. You've probably heard of the enthusiast EV brand Rivian, who builds those wonderful off-road vehicles. They're rolling out the more affordable and awesome R2 this year, and you've hopefully heard a lot about that. If you haven't, read up on the news. It's a great vehicle. On this episode, I get to speak on a little bit of a behind-the-scenes story. Rivian, if you're not familiar, operates its network of DC fast chargers called the Rivian Adventure Network, or RAN for short. And these chargers lean into that Rivian brand. You not only find them at the typical retail sites you may see your other networks like Electrify America at, you'll also find Rivian Adventure Networks at remote outposts like Moab or Yosemite. And these flagship locations are everything Rivian. They are granola, as in they literally have granola that you can buy and serve yourself. They have coffee, they have couches, they have test drive experiences for their vehicles. It's a brand investment, but it's also a serious charging network with some real build out. It's open to non-Rivian EVs and it works wonderfully, as JD Power surveys and other data can suggest. So, to dive into the nerdery of what makes the Rivian Adventure Network tick and how it operates, I'm speaking to its senior strategy lead, AJ Hatzis from Rivian. AJ Hatzis from Rivian and the Rivian Adventure Network, thank you so much for coming on to Directly Current.
Yeah, but you're really excited, Max. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. So first off, I think a lot of our listeners, almost all of them, hopefully are familiar with Rivian. Many of them probably charge at a Rivian site. Maybe they haven't yet if they don't have a Rivian. I believe it was 2 years ago you guys opened up as a third-party kind of charge point operator for all EVs. We're seeing this kind of renaissance, I would say, of EV charging in the U.S. For whatever headwinds about U.S. EV sales, it seems like you guys, no exception, Iona, lots of great networks, are investing a lot in reliability, new sites, building out. So first off, AJ, could you just give me an overview of like how the Rivian Adventure Network operates and what your guys' kind of unique draw is? Because I think you guys have a great thing going. I've been at your sites. I love them. But what makes the Rivian Adventure Network tick?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think what makes us tick is delivering that like Rivian experience that everyone is very familiar with vehicles and really putting it into the DC fast charging experience. And we pride ourselves on having really simple, easy to understand, right? Like the test I always do, if I just take my mom and said, hey, go charge here, can she do it? And I think she would be able to hear. And so that's something that we really pride ourselves on. We have the really easy tap to pay that I think is built into the charger, which I think just distinguishes us as we're trying to get everyone, you know, around this, over sort of this charging anxiety issue, right? And move beyond this sort of, when I pull up to a charger, will it work, right? Like, I think we're breaking through that. And so, you know, from our perspective, if you just look at the numbers, there's just an overall lack of charging, right? We are really excited by people like Iona and Mercedes-Benz and Walmart and people entering into this space, because I think we see a world where we're all playing and we're all supporting the EV transition and the transition to electrification. So beyond what I would say is just like our simplicity, we do also think really strongly about the customer experience. And so one of the ways that a good example of that is a lot of our drivers are maybe a little bit more adventurous, right? If they're driving an R1T, they may be towing. And so before RAN, towing and charging was a kind of complicated thing. You'd probably have to unhitch. You might have to back into a spot. It would be a bit of a mess. And at over 70% of our sites, at least one of the chargers is what we call trailer enabled. And that is you can pull up to the charger without unhitching and just go on your way. And we really want to just, again, just that's an example, but across the whole charging experience, right? Just like really center around the customer. I think that's the other piece. And so the final thing I'll say is just like, gone are the days where you're going to be in the back corner of a parking lot, right? Like we really want to move past that point. I think Iona does a great job with their rechargeries, and we do, I think, a really good job with our partners, right? Like we really push to get so the premium locations on site so that, zooming out, like that whole charging experience just becomes less of an event, right? Like right now, charging in people's mind is this big, right? Like there's lots of confusion around it and maybe it doesn't work. And right, like I just want to move past that as an owner of a network where, you know, you're going to pull up, you're going to get the speed that you want, the charger will work, and you'll be supported for the sort of 15 to 20 minute stop that you're, you know, participating.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, I think if folks haven't visited a RAND site, I think they should. I personally love how your dispensers have just very bright, I think like anti-reflective screens. I don't know what technology you're using, but it's much better than many other CPOs I've seen where like you're squinting, trying to understand like, am I going? How many kilowatts am I getting? And like you said, tap to pay, all that stuff's wonderful. Something else I wanted to touch on is you mentioned you work with great sites. You have these locations. You have the pull-throughs, which is awesome because we love the early adopters towing Airstreams or the R1Ts. I'm thinking of the fact that you guys, while you do, I think increasingly as you're building more of these sites, I've seen RANDs next to Electrify America and Tesla and other providers. You also, I think, have picked some pretty like off the map sites, which makes sense. But I just want to get your comments on that and get your thought process on how it comes to just site selection and where RAND's built out. Like I'm thinking in particular, last summer, I was able to stop at your Freeport site in Maine, visiting the Northeast. It was great. Like it's an area where, at least when I was there last year, it may have changed now, it wasn't a charging desert, but there definitely wasn't a convenient DC FC option. And the RAND right there was perfectly located. Maybe it was a little more expensive than my cheap self wanted to pay, but hey, you know what? I did it because it's such a great location next to LL Bean, all that wonderful stuff. Could you just comment on like location siting and how you guys approach that?
Yeah, I will answer this question, but I think I'll run back through our history a little bit because yeah. I think it's really illustrative of just how our kind of full process and where Rivian and Venture Network can play in the DC fast charging space. We launched in summer of 2022, and we launched as a closed network, which is just serving Rivian vehicles. Mm-hmm. And at that point, the strategy is really charger A, site A must connect you to site B, which must connect you to site C, and then repeat that across the entire like nation, right? And so that strategy then becomes a little different, right? When you're more playing in an open network space, right? Like all of a sudden in 2024, we get access to the Tesla supercharger network as like the Rivian driver gets access to the Tesla supercharger network, as do other OEMs. And so our strategy as we transition to an open network is, yes, we definitely want to be installing in the Freeport mains and filling in those charging deserts, because strategically for us, it's really important that drivers can go where they want to go, right? Like there should be no route in the United States that an EV driver can't take and a gas driver can take. That's like at the core of our philosophy. And what that looks like is going to really be different in different markets, right? So like you said, there are sites in really busy markets like in LA, in Denver, in some of the sort of heavier metros that we will be next to Electrify Americas, we will be next to Tesla sites, we'll be near Iona sites. And I really think that in the same way that more choice for the consumer is good in the EV side, I think it's really good on the in the infrastructure side, right? We want people to have a good selection of high quality, reliable charging providers, because ultimately I think it just benefits the consumer in the long run. And so our strategy has really shifted to, yes, we're supporting those adventurous locations like we really launched with, but now we're also really looking at deep metro locations and really supporting from a sort of capacity perspective, right? It's one thing to put one charging station along one stretch of the highway, but then in Thanksgiving, when you've got a queue of 20 vehicles for that one site, right? Like that doesn't really solve the problem necessarily. And so that's another thing that we think about as we plan our network is, okay, maybe there are other competitors around, but what is the sort of worst day of travel, Thanksgiving, Christmas Day, or July 4th weekend? And how do we protect against that? So that, again, if you're an EV owner, this charging event becomes a non-event. That's really where I think we get to for public infrastructure. If we're in the spotlight, that's generally a bad thing, right? Like public infrastructure should sit silent, be hucked behind, and support and really drive the products that everyone really wants to get into, which are EVs. And so, yeah, hopefully that goes a little, explains a little bit, which is like, you know, we're supporting those remote destinations. We're going to be increasingly supporting those sort of like deeper metro and metro edge sites where you're seeing us crop up, I think, mostly this year and then definitely into 27 and 28.
Awesome. Love to hear it. And I've witnessed that too, where I live in my area, Broomfield, Colorado. You guys have this wonderful site en route to Boulder, big recreation corridor for people, not exactly like the desert. And yet a place where you mentioned on those busy holidays, like there absolutely are not enough stalls at the other charging stations. I can see how that's useful. And on that capacity topic, you guys have this huge launch going on with R2 this year. Congrats on that to you and all your colleagues. You're selling as many as you can make, lots of that. And you mentioned that you opened up your network to non-Rivian EVs as well. So you have, I imagine, a huge spike in utilization from the early days of the network. What is that like to adapt to, aside from you have this wonderful new hardware you've built out, and I'm sure part of that is so that it can be open and communicate with all the non-Rivian EVs, but aside from that, at a network level, how are you guys adapting for just getting utilized a lot more?
Yeah, I love it. I love to see as many non-Rivian vehicles as I love to see Rivian vehicles on our venture network sites. It is, like I said, from our perspective, we just see that there's a lack of high quality DC fast chargers out there in the United States. And so we want to just be as open as we can and encouraging and remove charging anxiety across that customer base. And one of the things that's been really interesting, which is like top of mind for me, is just like how we transition to Max. Who's launched with Max, and Rivian has been in the Max world from a vehicle perspective sort of since mid last year. And then every OEM is all on their own timeline as well. And so we then also have a population of CCS vehicles that we are coming to know the Rivian Adventure Network and really enjoy it. But we also are selling R2s that have a Max port. And balancing that, we launched quite a few mix sites where we have both CCS and Max connectors available. Also just making sure that adapters are readily available in this sort of new world as the Max transition from a zoom down, not just Rivian Adventure Network, but industry transitions. So that's been really interesting. And then I think it's just finding drivers where they are, where they're at. So from a Rivian perspective, we have a very integrated navigation system. And most of our drivers are just, you know, relying on Rivian to find charging. But that may not be true across all other OEMs. It may not be true if you're considering different sort of channels of customers. So a rideshare driver may be interacting with their navigation very differently from the way a standard driver is. And so it's really like, how do we enable that discovery, right? So that we're just making ourselves as easy and as readily available as we possibly can. But yeah, overall, I think it's been a really positive switch. And I think it's great to see it it's great to see our product resonate with customers in the JD Power survey, where we were third best on sort of public infrastructure based off on user experience. That's really fantastic when we make a decision in December 2024 or whatever, before that, to launch our open network, that we're resonating with customers in the right way.
Yeah, and you're up against stiff competition, obviously. Tesla, whatever you think of them, Goliath, in the charging scene in particular, with their build-out. Iona, coalition of many automakers, but you guys have your own network, and obviously, I imagine, fewer resources than some of the largest players, and you are punching above your weight class really well in all those surveys and all of that reliability, which is lovely to see. But that gets into kind of the, you mentioned that the network is comprised of user experience, your kind of daily sites you hope that people, whether they're rideshare, commuters, whatever they may be, will go to. You also have, I think, these still like halo locations that are really cool. I was able to visit the Joshua Tree one, and I think the one outside of Yosemite when I was in California this summer, and it was wonderful. As you're, obviously, it's clear you guys spent the money on that. Now, it's a big investment in a brand. So how do you think about, I should say, like, between a site like that and maybe, let's say, a more pedestrian or normal Rivian Adventure site, did those, like, on that kind of like usability point of view, the traffic patterns, I just imagine they're going to be so different, right? Because you're going to have probably, my guess is, like, people going into the flagship sites like Joshua Tree and lingering a bit, maybe test driving an R1 or an R2, maybe chatting it up. Whereas other sites, they'll just want to ride that charge curve, get on back the highway as quickly as they can. So how do you think about utilization, like, among your different kinds of sites, in particular these wonderful halo sites you have that are a big, like, brand attraction?
Yeah, the charging outposts are really awesome. And so we've got three of them, one outside of Joshua Tree, one outside of Yosemite, as you mentioned, and then our third one, which we launched late last year, I think August of last year, in the Hamptons in New York. And they are really fantastic sites. I think they bring together like all that is Rivian into one kind of charging location. And so, yeah, really should encourage anyone who hasn't had a chance to get there. Yeah, definitely head out there. Those locations are very seasonal, right? So we definitely see a huge seasonal spike in the summertime, especially in the Hamptons and Yosemite. And then actually, interestingly, more in the wintertime across that Joshua Tree location. And so, like you said, right, like the on-site experience is very different. The other thing that I will mention that is somewhat similar, but not quite a charging outpost, is we launched a site in Rocklin, California, which sort of connects the Bay Area to Tahoe. And that is our first co-located sales, service, and charging location. So we have 12 RAN chargers. We have a sales center that has a lounge and 24/7 bathroom access, a free coffee and free drinks. And so I really like to think of this as these are examples of where we're just trying to push the envelope, really push forward on the with the charging industry and make sure that the experience is still being driven forward and we're not just resting on our laurels. I've had great feedback from that site in Rocklin. Like, people just said the ability to just sit down on a couch, right, versus being out walking around a sort of mall really distinguishes them. And so I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all policy, right? Like, there will still be a need for the site that you just can pull up, and maybe you're relying on sort of the existing amenities that are there. But we'll continue to play in that space and see where great opportunities come for us to level up the charging experience.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it. And I can personally attest that I think many people will find the reprieve of a couch really nice on that Bay Area, the Tahoe Trek, which, like I-70 here in Colorado, can get quite the traffic in the peak season.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. That's definitely, love to hear it. Another thing, you mentioned this NACS transition going on. We have the Tesla charging standard, essentially. Same communication protocol, different plug to get into the nerdiness of it. And we have this mixed environment where vehicles are definitely going to have both for a while. Between that, between things like plug and charge, which work fantastically with Rivians, but as I understand, may start to work with non-Rivians as well on your network. And you mentioned just the tap to pay, being able to use a card payment versus having to download the Rivian app. Those are all great things about meeting a customer where they are. How do you think about that? Because I can imagine internally, there's probably, I am benefit to even a non-Rivian customer using the Rivian app. You guys want to, I'm sure, figure out how people are using the network to improve it. You're hoping to expose them to the Rivian brand, but you also want to be convenient for the person who's stopping at your sites. And that's why, personally, I love the tap to pay option. How do you think about these kinds of things, especially as it, I guess, affects non-Rivian customers who are less in your wonderful integrated ecosystem as they come across your sites? How do you think about meeting customers that way?
Yeah, I think the first thing that we'll always lead with is simplicity and ease of use is going to be first and foremost. And we will always value the tap to pay customer, because I've been in DC fast charging for over 10 years and it's still lost on me why tap to pay was not just like the table stakes first entry point. Mm-hmm. And so I feel very strongly, right? Like that just for, especially as you're trying to transition people out of one, like out of ICE vehicles into a new platform, making the payment for how you refuel complicated is just like not something we're interested in. That said, we're really open to and actively investigating right now, right? Like different areas of opportunity where we can generate that stickiness with those customers that are maybe in the non-Rivian bracket, because we want people to be able to engage with the Rivian Adventure Network, regardless of if they're a Rivian driver or a non-Rivian driver, in similar ways. So I don't know specifics right now, but that's definitely something that we're really actively investigating and looking forward to rolling out some updates soon.
That's great. And then on that topic, between Rivian and non-Rivian customers, you guys, as I believe Mercedes and Tesla do, you have a kind of preferential pricing for Rivian drivers, which makes sense. And value, I think, the drivers is something people are increasingly thinking about with fast charging as we're getting some semblance of competition. I wouldn't say we're in a realm of abundance right now, but we're well out of the, you've been in the DC world for a while. 10 years ago was very much a landscape of scarcity. Now you have a landscape of, I think, more sophisticated drivers who are used to roaming across networks. You have a better understanding among people of like time of use rates and how that might vary. And I've seen that you guys have experimented with that at some sites, which is great to see. How do you think about just DC infrastructure? No easy thing to permit, site, build, and then maintain. How do you think about that kind of pricing model? Because I can imagine there's a very different value proposition to some of your like remote, the outpost sites versus some of the sites that may be in competition with other nearby things and sharing other amenities. So how do you guys approach that? In particular, one more niggle to add there is like I've noticed Tesla has a membership. Even if you don't drive a Tesla, I can get a preferential rate. To my knowledge, Rivian doesn't have that yet, but you are starting to build out your network more. Are you exploring ideas like that as you think about serving more drivers?
Yeah, so I think part of this is we're really only a year into being an open network, right? Like when we began, we launched our first site in December of 2024. We then, from January of the next year, started retrofitting all the old chargers to be the chargers that are taller, have the longer cable, have the tap to pay. And so we really finished that campaign in earnest in November of last year, and that put the network at about 85 to 90% open to all EVs. Mm-hmm. And so this is really like year one for us. And so all of the things that you've just discussed are really top of mind, which is like delivering value to the customer, whether they be Rivian or non-Rivian drivers. We're certainly looking into, I don't want to say membership because I don't want to like tie us down to that, but how do we build that sort of like loyalty and that brand loyalty for the non-Rivian customer in a way that is delivering value to them? Because ultimately, when I zoom out on this question a little bit, it's what was really pushing people to make the switch to EVs? It's that, hey, you get a little bit more of a stable kind of fueling ecosystem, right? If you have home charging, that rate is going to be pretty set. And then even with just a small amount of DC fast charging, like your overall cost of ownership comes down. And so that's really the model that I want to bring through for the Rivian Adventure Network is I want to constantly be delivering, driving value up for the consumer. And so, like you said, there are some remote sites and we can get into the weeds on the way that utilities set up their tariffs and the way that the bills hit. And so we're constantly looking at our pricing. We're constantly tweaking and we're really trying to right size. And again, there'll be more to come on this topic around like loyalty and membership shortly, but nothing specific as of now. But yeah, it's an area that I'm really excited to get more in the weeds on, because I think, you know, like I said, people are resonating with the product. And so now I want to give them that space to like really create loyalty.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you're thinking about it, particularly at a time where I think we're seeing like maybe the older generation networks. I'm not going to name names here, but there are absolutely charging networks who, in my opinion, have very flat, non-changing rates that maybe don't represent reality all the time. And for some sophisticated EV drivers, that's become like, oh, I'm going to skip that. I'm going to go to this station instead. I'll go to the Rivian site. I'll go to the Tesla site. Mm-hmm. I think we're starting to see that kind of behavior, particularly like in Rivian vehicles. You have a great built-in route planner. And I believe you're a better route planner data to like kind of source charger reliability. I think people really, the quality is going to go from being this word of mouth thing to probably being a value driver I can see at these sites. So I guess without going too in the weeds on the utility and the wonderful engineering that enables these sites, like, do you see that maybe in any data? Do you see that people are seeking out your sites, whether they're Rivian customers or not, because they're really reliable or because they like the experience? Do you find that there's in an environment where someone maybe has a choice of a few charging networks, do you find there's things that are pushing people towards Rivian?
Yeah, I definitely see that in our Google reviews and in our comments, right? I see actually a lot of first-time EV drivers. So we see a lot of people that are really just like resonating with how simple it is to just start the charge versus maybe the other solutions that maybe you get a package that you purchase through the OEM or something to certain networks. And simplicity, I think, is always really resonant with the EV charging, within the EV charging community. And then there's definitely... It's actually interesting. It's at some of our sites where we've retrofitted, right? So where we had a site that was previously just Rivian only, and then it gets opened up to be open for all. It's all like, I didn't know this could be as simple as this. And so that's been really rewarding just to see as non-Rivians just discover us organically. And so, yeah, I think there's lots of, one of the wonderful things about working EV charging is there's so much data, right? Like you get data from the vehicle, you get data from the chargers, there's all sorts of things that build into it. And I wouldn't say I've necessarily seen the effect of, oh, there's an Ionna, there's a Tesla, there's a Rivian, and we can really track like in that minute detail, but it's something that we're aware of. And again, we're monitoring all the data tools.
Yeah. And I do want to get, while we have time here, a little bit in the weeds, because I think one of the wonderful things about Rivian as a brand is many of the employees, the team, you guys are yourselves EV drivers. I imagine most of you Rivian drivers, right? Especially now with R2. And so having that, I think, enthusiast perspective, it's always, I found it as an enthusiast, it's visible, right? You can tell brands that engage with EV drivers because the team building that brand actually is living that experience. So I want to come back to, you mentioned the pull-through sites, towing trailers. That's very much an early adopter use case. And yet I've seen it in my circle, and I love my nerdy circle, but people do it, right? People who have R1Ts, people who are first in line for an R2, they want to be able to max out that tow rating and tow things and get to Moab and do all that. And you have people who are even ordering things like the Lightship product or the Pebble RV, the campers that have the built-in auxiliary battery with their own charging stall. Maybe that's a thing that future sites could support. So when you think about the enthusiast and the bleeding edge, how do you balance that? How do you think that maybe gives you guys an advantage over maybe like networks, or let's say we're seeing retailers and we're seeing like non-EV brands get into charging? How do you think it differentiates you guys that you guys are enthusiasts and obviously you're associated with a brand that's, I think, into the geekery and all the lovely ways that entails of EVs?
Yeah, I think it's a really great point. Like I have an R1S. I drive it all the time. I use as many Ryan sites as I can. I'm about to, I did this last year or 2 years ago, but I'm going to drive to North Carolina, where my wife is from, across all of I-40. You can basically get all the way through New Mexico just on RAN. Then we got to go to some other networks, but it's awesome. Just like that was not possible kind of a couple of years ago. So we very much are heavy EV users and heavy EV charging users. I think it makes a difference in the sense that until you've had a really negative experience, it can be somewhat difficult to translate to people just like how bad that can be. And I unfortunately have had those bad experiences that then give me the perspective of just not conceding on certain points. And so zooming out, I think one of our biggest and strongest assets that we have is that we design, build, and manufacture our own chargers. In Normal, Illinois, we are a constant feedback cycle from the product designers through to the people that are installing that product, through to the people that are maintaining that product, through to our voice of customer teams. It's a constant feedback loop so that we're always improving and we're always understanding where our customer is and where they want to go. And then we can design our products that way. I think our vertical integration, which at Rivian is really core to how we operate as a company, I think that works so well on the cars and it works so well on the charging. And you see it just in how the chargers operate. And so that's, I think, really one of our strongest competitive advantages is just that we know EVs really well. Like when we were doing the upgrade from the closed network charger to the open network charger, right? Like doing the cable testing so that we're developing a cable that's long enough such that it can serve all the EVs, but not too long so that there's cable on the ground and it's just a bad customer experience because we've all experienced that as EV drivers. And so just those, I think, attention to detail on the customer experience is really something that I really value highly. And I think is something that will continue to resonate with EV drivers.
Yeah, and I can second that because I have been to your point of the pain of seeing maybe the experiences when it doesn't work out so well. I think like a lot of enthusiast EV drivers may be familiar with knowing, oh, XYZ charging network, you don't want the Delta hardware, you want the ABB hardware, or whatever else it is. Not anything against those brands in particular, but when you have off-the-shelf vendors and it's just a different experience, right, compared to what you guys are doing, which I would say is more akin to Tesla in the way you're kind of designing your stations from the ground up. There's challenges to that, but clearly a lot of benefits, which is really nice to see. AJ, really appreciate our time here. Is there anything else you're looking forward to? I mean, 2026, huge year for Rivian as a brand. EVs continue to plug along in the US. We had this dip after the tax credit expired, and now it seems that world events being what they are, higher fuel prices, EVs actually have some tailwind behind them for once. As you're looking at this exciting year, times to come ahead, what are you thinking about for the Rivian Adventure Network, for EV charging in general, from your point of view?
Yeah, I'll start on EV charging. So I think EV charging in general, I think I echo what you said earlier, which is just like we've made such incredible strides over honestly the last like year and a half, right? So I'm really encouraged about DC fast charging in the United States. I think you look at the JD Power survey, right? That year over year, the reliability is improving. Now you have multiple players playing. It's just going to add more competition and ultimately be a benefit for the EV driver. On the Rivian Adventure Network side, what that looks like is just like we're in construction across many sites right now. We're going to see a bunch of sites go live before the end of the year. We're going to kind of continue to see that roll out. I think I'm really excited because we are going to be deploying sites in some of these kind of busier markets where people are maybe less on their capital A adventure, right? Like going out and climbing a mountain, but on their kind of lowercase A adventure, going to the shops as their daily route, right? And we'll be there to support that and both. And I'm really excited to see all the awesome sites that we've got coming down the pipeline and kind of some of the exciting kind of like non-Rivian customer benefits that we're looking at. Overall, yeah, just very bullish on EV charging and EVs as a whole because I think RT is a good example, but we've got lots of vehicles coming out which are really competitive and really compelling. And so it's just an exciting time to be an EV again. So I'm excited.
Love to hear it. I'm personally, very excited for many friends with interest in R2. Personally, I have a lot of interest in the R3. And I'm sure your team always gets site suggestions. But while I have you, one I'll pass along is Nederland, Colorado here. Big corridor. People love to go to Estes Park. People love to ski at Eldora. It would be lovely to have some kind of DC fast charging there. So just an idea there to pass along to the team. But love the network. Love all the work you're doing, AJ, with the team at Rivian. Thanks so much for your time.
Max, really appreciate it.
A big thank you to AJ Hatzis from Rivian and to Peeble Squire from the Rivian Communications team for making this happen. We really appreciate you listening and tuning in to Directly Current, which you can get at your podcast feed of choice or even on YouTube. Please do stay tuned because we do release regular episodes with guests inside EV World all the time, like Rivian. And Lord knows, there's a lot of exciting stuff down the pipeline this year for EVs. Maybe not for the rest of the world, but for EVs at least. I've been Max Patton, your host. Please do check out all the work we do at EVs for All America. You can check out our website in the podcast description, evsforamerica.org. Wonderful work we're doing with polling, lobbying, EV advocacy with our partner, the American EV Jobs Alliance as well. I've been Max Patton. Once more, thanks so much for listening. I'll see you next time.